This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Keisha Daniels graduated from Skidmore College on a Saturday and started her first master's program at UNC Chapel Hill the following Monday. That's a snapshot of Keisha's lifelong drive for continual learning. She picked up three more advanced degrees at UNC Chapel Hill and has spent much of her career as a teacher, principal, administrator, and a mother in the Durham Public School system. Today, she is the director of consulting for Thinking Maps. It's a firm that applies brain research to classroom learning. And as most North Carolina's public school students return to the classroom this week, she joins me in our studio to offer her perspective on how we can all help these kids learn to be better learners. Keisha, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Well, you know, let me start with the standards, because we hear a lot about standards. They become controversial, in public education and how they're measured. And obviously it's important to have standards, but measurement, testing, that becomes controversial. How should we understand this? Let's just start there. How should we understand the value of testing?
So let me first share that standards are good. We need standards. We all have standards. And at the root of it, standards are what we expect children to know at each level, at each grade level. I think where we start to have more conversation is around this idea of how these standards are measured. And there's this odd, murky, yet interconnected line that we often hear about, that we battle over. Because there are lots of different ways to measure a standard. You can measure before. What does a child know about a particular content? During. What does a teacher need to know to reframe and reteach? And then at the end, the summative. And I think it's that summative piece that spurns a lot of conversation. We tend to think of the summative as the standardized test. And that's where we really tend to have a lot more discussion, because we know that there are lots of children who can understand and know the content, but they may not do well on a standardized test. So we find ourselves asking, do they really know the content? And I think that's one of the biggest discussions that we have in education.
But there's something else embedded in what you said. Standards are good. Yes, we have to have them, because we need to know whether or not students have obtained the information at each level. It's that at each level part that becomes also controversial, because kids don't be at levels just because they're in second grade, right? That's not how the human brain develops.
That is correct. So I think if you would ask me what where I think maybe we've gone wrong a bit is historically, we know that education didn't always start out like how we are traditionally used to going to school. So somewhere along the line, when we became an industrialized nation, we decided that in 6.5 hours a day, 180 days a year, children had to learn certain things, or else something maybe wasn't quite right. Right? It kind of dropped them off into this deficit way of thinking. However, that's really not how we learn. We know that there are things that take us adults, children, everyone in between, lots more time to really understand. And so I think this idea of truncating education into a percentage of time and or a standard measurement leads us to focus more on getting things done as opposed to really helping children think about how to think about learning and how do we think about these topics. Teachers will tell you, I don't have time. Because we have to get this done in this year in order to move them on to the next thing. So that's an interesting piece.
Well, you talk about higher orders of thinking. And so if we're talking about levels, we should perhaps think about those orders of thinking rather than a kind of calendar. Tell us about those orders of thinking. What do you mean?
Yeah, so what we like to think about in education ease, I like to say, are these taxonomies of learning. And largely the taxonomies fall into two main ideas of thinking, Bloom's taxonomy and then Webb's depth of knowledge. And it's probably easier to tell you more about what higher orders of thinking are not. And largely those fall into the recall and the low levels of understanding. Recall is at its very basic, just that. Recall a time, recall a name, recall an idea. Whereas higher orders of thinking really get into having children metacognitively think about their thinking and to be able to create new ways of thinking, analyze someone's thinking, apply their learning to a new situation, strategic and extended ways of thinking. And largely, we sometimes focus too much on those lower levels, and there's not enough of the higher levels that are embedded into our day-to-day teaching styles.
So let's talk about the value of this. You mentioned something called metacognitive thinking, which is to say watching me think. So it's one thing. So I present a child with a problem, and they solve it. Now, what you're asking them at this metacognitive level is say, how did you do that? Think about how you did that so that you can return to that. You can use that process again should you have a similar problem.
Absolutely. And it also speaks to not just think about it, but tell me about it. How did you arrive at that problem? And what were you thinking about when you got to that problem? Can you help a friend think differently about a problem? That's a very higher order way of thinking.
And then we get to this question of teaching to the test. You know, how did you learn that? Because they made me learn that.
Yep.
So you have to think, well, if this teacher ever goes away, I'll never be able to learn again, right?
Exactly. I mean, and you cannot have those systems set up and designed for children, because then they start to think, maybe it's not me. Maybe it's not about how I think, but it was just my really good teacher helped me think about it like that.
Now, this leads us back to the creators of this program and the supporters of this kind of education, who would say, yeah, but in your way, Keisha, how am I going to know that this child is actually learning anything? Because when they become an adult, they're going to need to know things, right? They're going to have a database of stuff they know. And beyond that, I need to know that they actually know how to think, because they're going to be out in the world now applying this.
Right.
Are there tests, and should we test some kind of progress even along those lines on these orders of thinking?
Well, I think that largely when we think about higher orders of thinking, it comes out as a natural progression of the way that we have, how we work in the real world. It's very rare that you get a job where you're not interacting with other people, where you're not having to analyze problems, where you're not having to create things, where you're not having to apply information to new situations. So I think that the world we live in begs us to think in ways that support higher orders of thinking. And perhaps we're not giving children and education enough of that early on, so that when kids get out into the real world, they're all of a sudden smacked with, oh, wait, you're not asking me to choose C.
Right.
You're asking me to think about what went into this question.
I didn't memorize the answer to this brand new problem.
Absolutely.
Critical thinking skills. So you're saying that we should teach this at an earlier age, that we don't actually get to critical thinking until we get to college. This is the sort of misunderstanding about what happens in a liberal education. Mostly you learn how to think, and that hasn't happened in the previous 12 years to that degree. But how would it work? You can do this with kindergarten kids? You teach critical thinking, and how would it look?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it largely doesn't look much different from some of the interactions that we may have at home when we're asking and questioning and digging deeper into things. So part of what I think we've done is we've reserved large amounts of critical thinking and higher order thinking for later on. There are smatterings of it, don't get me wrong, and great schools and great teachers out there who are doing it. I think what we forget about is this overlap of critical thinking and content can happen at the very beginning. So I'll talk to a lot of teachers who'll say, oh, I don't know if I should ask that question. It might be too hard for my kindergartners. And I'll say, absolutely not. It depends on how you frame it. So if we think about something as simple as wars, right, conflict, we know that largely in our state, we have a lot of curriculum that doesn't really give students access to these types of conversations until they get to high school, because they're looking at American history, world history. However, the basic idea of what we know about conflict occurs on kindergarten playgrounds every day. So if I'm thinking about how I can get them to connect to a content area and or a curriculum, I could easily say to a kindergartner, let's talk about it. What are most of the conflicts that happen on the playground? And someone will say, he took my ball, she took my lunch. Let's think about that. Some of our wars in our country are started over the same things. Someone took my land, someone took my money, and power is a part of that. So let's focus on the ideas and the thinking that comes out of curriculum, as opposed to worrying so much about timelines and timeframes. And does it really matter on some of these things that are more focused on the doing, the listing, the lower level types of thinking. So it definitely can be taught.
And it sounds like essential to that, again, how you ask the question. If I think I'm going to be penalized for the wrong answer, that's going to suppress thought. But if I'm rewarded for coming up with any old process that somehow gets at it, then I'm going to produce a whole different kind of thinking and a whole different student.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You've used this research as a reading recovery teacher at McDougall Elementary in Chapel Hill. Now tell us about that and what kind of results you got.
So reading recovery was one of the best programs that we had in terms of really thinking about not just how we teach children how to read, but I would say one of the best things about that program was the attention to professional and instructional development that were focused solely on teachers. And unfortunately, it was an expensive program. However, we've sacrificed the program that gave us so much and taught us so much about how teachers collaboratively learn and build capacity for understanding how to teach reading. And we let money take that away, because I don't think that there's been another program since that has focused on professional development in the way that it really should have been focused on. You take teachers for 3 to 4 hours out of the classroom to work collaboratively with each other to become better teachers, and that happens once a week, that's a lot of time. And I understand that too. However, as a professional, I grew more in the 2 years that I was a reading recovery teacher than probably any other year since then.
I am amazed at how we approach questions of education funding, because when we find programs that work and then see there's a price tag, we say we can't afford it.
Yep.
But actually, that's education. So now that's the price of education. You know what? Electricity is expensive too, but
that's
it's real
right.
hard to do this show. And I say, well, you know, if I could just cut it, if I could cut out the cost of electricity, this show would be a lot cheaper to produce.
But you wouldn't have a great show.
And
you wouldn't have a show.
So I don't always understand the thing. Let's talk about, because you've also worked in Australia and you've done work in Nairobi, Kenya. And I wonder how you see the U.S. system compared to other systems and kind of what you've learned by taking your research and your experience abroad.
Right. I think one of the most important takeaways that I've had any time I've been able to submerge myself in the education system in any other country outside of America has been the want, the need, the understanding of how important education is. And I think that that has struck me more than anything. There was a particular time when I was in Kenya and I was doing a guest lecture at Kenyatta University, and I got there early in order to just, you know, check the room and see where I was going to be. And it was about 45 to 50 minutes earlier than my presentation. And there were masses of students outside of the lecture hall. And I thought something had happened. I thought maybe there was a fire alarm. I didn't know what had happened. So I asked one of the students, I said, did something happen? And they said, no, we are waiting for the next lecture. We want to be first. We want to get to the seats in the front. And I was floored, because there's a different paradigm around education. We visited schools that had clay floors, no windows, no cafeterias, and the teacher could leave the classroom and the children automatically, without her having to say anything, just kept the instruction going. There was just a different way of thinking around education and the importance of education.
Is that reflected in public support for education, or do you think these are cultural differences? I guess my question is, what accounts for that?
I think it's probably a number of things. I personally think that when you really value education as a way to better yourself, your situation, you care about it. And the options, I think that's another big piece of it, are the options may not be as varied and diverse in a lot of other countries. So especially in areas that are impoverished and or they just don't have as many opportunities, they see it as their way. The other thing I can also offer is this idea of community engagement and community support is a given. You may leave because you've been educated, but you come back and you do something in your community. It's just a part, again, of the paradigm.
What about as you look over the landscape here in the United States, so much controversy about education, I think a general sense of gloom about where we are, and maybe I could ask you about that, but mostly about your outlook and your sort of hopes mm-hmm. for education in this country in the future.
Yeah. Well, so I think, unfortunately, as Americans, we tend to focus on the gloom, whereas education is a servant leadership focus. If you get into education, there's a pretty good root cause that comes behind wanting to do well. So you can't be but hopeful when you think about education. I think that as education as an art form needs to be better about positively sharing our narratives, and that we should see great things happening and hear about great things happening in education. And we should understand that that's not just the exception, but that's what happens. So we just have to shift our narrative.
Great to talk with you, and thank you for sharing all of that with us. Keisha Daniels is a longtime educator and director of consulting for Thinking Maps. It's a firm that focuses on applying brain research to classroom learning. You can find out more about her and what we've talked about at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, which is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, and Katie Barron. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.